Dr. Nick and Hot Aussie Chick Show is brought to you by the LasVegasAdvisor.com, CasinoMeister.com, and ThePog.com. Three great sites for all your casino gaming information needs.
If you're receiving this transmission, then this operation is a success. Dr. Nick and the Hot Aussie Chick are in the house and ready to dissect blackjack, poker, and everything in between.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another edition of Dr. Nick and the Hot Aussie Chick. How are you doing, Dr. Nick?
Good, and how are you, Ms. Hot Aussie Chick?
Good. I want to apologize, though, even though I'm good. People aren't good, because the sound levels in the last show were just messed up. That would be my fault.
Okay. What happened there?
You know why? Well, I was just kicking back, away from my mic, just, you know, yabbering away, not even thinking for a second that I probably should be sitting close to it. And then we had poor sound quality.
Okay, well, we'll try to work it out. This time it'll be a little bit better. So, how are things in hot Australia now that it's sunny weather? Are you enjoying the springtime?
Look, you know what? I am, but as usual, I have the craziest life in the world. I know, I really think people would love to hear about it. I just, you know, do I save them? I've got lots of court cases happening, and I have crazy exes ringing my phone and hanging up, and writing stuff over Facebook and apparently doing all kinds of nutty stuff. So,
that definitely sounds like a full life, to say the least.
Well, one that one would not wish for, but anyway.
But nonetheless, well, I think that we had a little bit of a discussion on what we're going to talk about, but I think this is a good lead-in to what we wanted to talk about. Which was the mental health of gamblers, or poker players, or blackjack players, or professional gamblers of any level, and how vital it is that players do their best to maintain that even keel and not get too emotional either way.
Correct. And do you know, the resident psychologist that we have, Dr. Alan Schoonmaker, go check out his site, everyone, and one of his 100 million books that he's written in his 80-odd years of life. He actually said something to me once, which really made me feel so proud. Amidst all of the chaos in my life, I'm just still pretty level-headed. In fact, you know, one day I even went and performed my duties doing a radio show. I think it was with you. When chaos had just happened, that some people just couldn't be able to handle, you know, on a normal day.
Right, right. Well,
let alone just go straight on in and do a show. So.
Well, sometimes in gaming, you have to play when you don't feel emotionally capable. And a great example of this is sometimes you need a push. But Phil Hellmuth recently won, what is his 15th bracelet or 16th bracelet, something of that nature. And I was talking to him during the World Series of Poker, and he said he was texting his wife and said that he really didn't feel like playing that day. And he was just kind of lackadaisical and blah.
Yeah, I think I was there listening in to that conversation.
Yeah, and I think his wife told him, get your ass out of bed and go play. So sometimes we need that jolt, and he did it. And you know, sometimes sometimes it works for the best of you. I mean, you gotta remain focused, and all of a sudden things just work out. And that particular day, it did work out for Mr. Hellmuth for his record 15th or 16th bracelet. I'm not sure which one, but 15th.
Phil 15.
Yeah, 15th Phil. So yes, and he leads the whole field of people ever to play poker with the most bracelets ever. So it worked out that way. Now,
and they're one in recent days, not, you know, back in forever when there were small fields.
Well, he won his first bracelet in the late 80s, I think, right? The main event.
Mm. Look, I honestly could not tell you.
Yeah, I believe it was in the late 80s against John Chan.
The main event?
Yeah, the main event. It was the main event.
Oh, I didn't. There you go. I didn't even know that. Sorry, Phil. Didn't know that you'd won the main event.
Yes, he won a big against Johnny Chan, because it was like Johnny Chan won the previous two, I think. And I think it was Chan and him at the third one.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden, he busted him. So, yeah, or at the final table. So, again, mental health, very important. Now, I've been to a couple poker parties this year, or not this year, actually, mm-hmm. in the past several years around World Series of Poker
not
Time.
Not this year.
No, not this year. Around World Series of Poker Time. And especially among the younger generation of poker players, the guys in their mid-20s.
I think we touched on this once.
Yeah, we did briefly, but of how there's just a barrage of drugs and alcohol and the live fast lifestyle that goes along with poker players. So
right, because they have sudden bursts of money.
Exactly.
And this is not just poker players. Can we not just pick on poker players?
Exactly.
Here? I have to come for the poker defense. There's like, look at craps players and video poker players sitting there, you know, just drinking drink after drink after drink after drink and snorting coke in the bathroom. Not that I've witnessed it, I'm just saying, you know.
Right. Well, it's. I think what goes along with that is that just the sudden influx of money. Because if you read the book, Bringing Down the House by Ben Mezrich about the MIT blackjack teams. He talks about this, about how the drugs and the fast influx of money leads to all sorts of nefarious activity. You got some drugs, you got prostitution, all sorts of things of that nature come into that. Now, I personally did not witness any of this stuff when I was on the MIT teams, but my team was a later team, and I'm sure, at least to some degree, you can experience that. Now, specifically, if we go back even further, there was a player by the name of Kenny Houston, who was probably mm-hmm. one of the top blackjack players ever to play the game. Brilliant guy. Harvard
yes,
and Yale.
Him.
Harvard and Yale guy.
Anyone that hasn't.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just interrupting, talking over the top. But I like to talk.
Well,
anyone who hasn't read about him definitely should.
Yeah, he was Kenny Houston. There's a great book for anybody interested in learning to play blackjack at a high level called Million Dollar Blackjack. And you mm-hmm. can pick up that book just for a few dollars on Amazon or eBay. But again, this guy, he lived on a very straight and narrow path. I think he graduated high school when he was like 15 or 16, and then went to Yale and Harvard, and was a vice president at the Pacific Stock Exchange when he was like 28 or 29. Now, mm-hmm. so he made a decent amount of money, but when you get brought into that world of gambling where lights and girls and drinking.
Oh, and it's such a great world.
Yes.
It is.
I hope
no one's thinking that we're saying it's not.
Well, you have to be careful, because you can get lured into a trap of the drugs and the alcohol. And the tragic thing about Kenny Houston was he did die broke and penniless in a nightly rental in Paris. So now, usually that comes from people who just can't control their emotional state. And a lot of that comes from, I want to say, just my guess is that the sudden influx of money, that they can do whatever they want and there are no consequences. But there are consequences. And now, mm-hmm. Now this blackjack player I can speak of, but again, other players are very disciplined. And maybe you can enlighten us a little bit about someone. There was a poker player too, a very famous poker player.
That, like Stuango?
That's exactly who I'm thinking of. So if you could elaborate a little bit on him, that'd be great.
Well, I don't think it's to anyone's surprise. I mean, most people know Stuanga, right? Well, I've not know him. A lot of my friends know him, of course, before he passed away.
Or know of him, I think, would be a better term.
They know of him, yes. But then my friends, my older poker-playing friends, a lot of my mentors know him, or knew him, rather. Mm-hmm. And certainly he took on that lifestyle. I mean, the lifestyle beyond the extravaganza. I mean, you know, of going and buying a nice car or a nice condo or a nice, you know, whatever. Again, drugs, alcohol, women. Yeah. I don't know, there's a living blackjack player that I think does that, but I don't think he's going to run out of money.
Who is that?
Well, Don Johnson.
Don Johnson, I know Don. He is a very, very fast living, I want to say,
blackjack player. And then there's Dan Bazarian, who is a poker player. His name is even in a song because he's got so many women around him all the time and he's fast cars and whatever else.
Right.
I hope they don't have bad runs.
Well, you know, you never know, but... the important thing is just to make sure that you control yourself and you don't...
Another thing is, too, sexual promiscuity. Is that the word that I should use?
That's as good a word as any, I suppose.
Well, you know, you just see these guys running around banging any chick that they can get hold of. And,
well, again, that's the...
You know, that's just a mental health thing.
Well, I don't have that problem, Edgar. But what I'm telling you is that this whole lifestyle can be very dangerous if the person doesn't know what they're doing. And not only for men, too. I mean, there are some women, I believe, who have some bad instances. There was a woman who died or had a cocaine overdose several years ago. What was her name?
Well, I know that there's been plenty. Brandy Horbaker,
example. Was that her real name? Or was a poker player?
Or was, yes. She allegedly committed suicide and had some drug and alcohol issues. I don't wish to speak, awful of the dearly departed, of course. But then there's lots of females that, here in this day and age that I know go to the toilet and snort coke.
Hmm. Now, is that poker players or are those
all
gamblers?
Well, I don't know too many female blackjack players.
Or just
yes,
gamblers in general? Well, in general, Las Vegas...
And weed, drinking. I'm a drinker.
You're right. Las Vegas tends to be a very, a town where it's very easy to get narcotics or what they call party favors.
Right.
No,
is that what they call them?
Well, that's what they call them here. In any major city, I mean, you could go outside and in 10-20 minutes, you could probably have any drug that you want. So, again,
I wouldn't be saying party favors. I'd be saying, can I have some coke? Do you have any? Where do I get some?
Well,
I want a joint. I don't know these words.
Now, speaking of this, there is I think I showed you this picture. I was in the bathroom stall once at the Flamingo, and this was either a very clever or very stupid drug dealer. He says, if you want coke or weed, call this number. And it was on the back of a stall.
Yes.
Do you remember that? So, again, obviously not too bright. But again, Las Vegas.
So that's just that's drugs, but that's because of mental health issues. I am the first person to know this. I was Miss Weed Universe. Honest to God, I was for so many years of my life, younger life. You know, not adulthood, so to speak. And... what does that cause? Mental health issues. But why did I smoke it? Probably mental health issues. I've suffered depression, I've suffered anxiety, and I've really copped it hard when I've had massive downswings. You know, everyone knows hard that is. Losing streak that, but obtaining mental health is a very difficult thing.
Yeah, definitely. Especially in this field when the financial swings are so drastic. Now, there's a great analogy that an old teammate of mine said. He was an older gentleman named Lou, and he says the swings are being a blackjack player or being a professional gambler, an advantage player, is the equivalent of being a manic depressant. Either you're really, really high or you're really, really low. But and sometimes, you can be up quite a bit of money and just still feel not fulfilled,
Well, that's me.
Right.
I'm never going to be fulfilled.
Right. But it's regardless of having that edge over the house of being the casino at their own game, especially when you're an advantage player or some sort, whether it's blackjack or hole carding or any one of the major things that you can do.
Well, you're watching your back all the time.
Oh, yes,
situation.
Yeah, exactly, 100%. You're kind of paranoid, and And most people, when they're gambling, if they're up quite a bit of money, yeah, they're excited and they're rearing to go. But for a professional player, it's your thinking, what goes on in your head is, oh my God, it's only a matter of time before I get busted, because
And then, of
I
course,
can't win
but
$20,000 in a weekend, or $50,000, whatever amount it may be, and have them not, start
look at
looking.
me,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. So
And then
it.
poker players, on the other hand, I mean, a lot of the time it's not even all money for them. They're dedicating year after year after year to try and win that bracelet or try and win that championship. And they might be cashing and staying financially above board, but when you're adding in all of the travel and the accommodation and the budgeting and the bankroll management, and you're just not succeeding, and you're copying a second, a second, a second, or a min
Right.
cash, min cash, min cash, min cash.
Well, our
It's
good
kind of
friend,
draining
yeah,
mentally.
our good friend Alan Kessler is the master of the min cash.
The chainsaw,
Yes.
yes. He's, I
Now,
mean, sure.
the dilemma, I would say, or not the dilemma, but sometimes people have a great deal of money, that they can fall back on. And there's some female poker players I know of that fit that in. And Alan Kessler is one. I mean, he came from a very wealthy family, as I recall. So again, the
But Alan
stress.
still gets annoyed
Oh
when he's, it still affects
Oh
him,
yeah, it
but
does
he's.
affect. But if you add the added stress of not having a financial cushion to fall back on, and knowing that you have to make money to feed your kids or to eat,
Like
or
me.
right, it can become very, very
Daunting.
trying on your mental state. And bad beat after bad beat, which is certainly possible in poker. It happens a lot. And even in blackjack, I mean, it's perfectly natural. Even if you do everything right, you could take bad beat after bad beat. I've known guys who have had monster counts or very favorable situations, and they get 20s, with $1,000 or $2,000 on the table, and the
And
dealer
the
ha
dealer gets a blackjack, let me guess.
or the dealer has a 16, a six up, a 10 in the hole, and draws a five. It just happens, and you have to be able to take those swings up and down. Now, it happens, so you have to be able to prepare yourself mentally for those and just be able to ride the storm out. It's very, very likely that a professional gambler could have, even an advantage player, could half their bankroll. Even if you're playing to an edge, if you have a $100,000 bankroll, you could drop to 50,000. If you have a $50,000 bankroll, you could drop to $25,000 and
So,
before start making.
for people who kind of, aren't that into gambling, as in they're not professional gamblers, so to speak, yet, and they haven't experienced that, my suggestion would be, imagine just walking out on the street right now and throwing half of the cash you have out on the street and letting whoever have it. It's
Right.
like, okay, now I have half my cash.
Right, but you but it takes mental toughness to get through that, and knowing to know that things will get better and the math will kick in. When I was, I think we talked about this last time, where I was incarcerated by
Right.
them. I
Yes, we
mean,
talked about
well, what got me through that, I was about to lose my shit at one point towards the
that.
end.
You're about to lose your shit. I would definitely
Yeah,
lost my shit.
at
If I was locked up, that would be it. I'd be screaming and kicking. I'd bite people.
by day seven, I was about ready to go nuts. But what I would one thing about blackjack and gaming that you learn is that is how to handle the swings. You come to know that your highs are never as high as you think they are, and your lows are definitely not as low as you think they are. Now,
And you become more patient
well,
too.
yeah, you patient, you ride out the bad swings, whether it's personal or professional. There was a great speech. I wrote an article for Forbes magazine a few years ago, and it was when noted horse racing better Bill Bettner was inducted into the Hall of Fame, in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. Where we got to start in blackjack, and during his acceptance speech, he gave a profound argument, for studying blackjack. Because the game of blackjack teaches you patience and teamwork, and the fact and the understanding that even though you had a bad day one day, you did and you did everything right, and you still had that bad day, you will know that if you keep doing the right things and putting yourself in the right position, that eventually the math will kick in, or just by sheer coincidence, the probability theory, you will have good days. So check it out.
If that works for poker, I am definitely going to be a World Series of Poker bracelet winner one day.
One day, that's good. But important of mental health, you got to, you know, be able to understand the swings.
Let's forget about talking about it now. And let's worry about solving these issues. You're a doctor.
Well, what you got to do is just understand what you're getting into, understand the swings, and try to avoid, I think what the term is, leaks, right? Try to avoid...
Leaks would be things like alcohol and drugs and wasting ridiculous amounts of money on pussy.
Or just gambling. Just straight gambling.
Oh, okay.
Say you win $100,000 or something playing poker. Just don't go and sit there at the roulette table and try to double it, or don't go crazy at the sports betting, or don't throw money around. See, one of the greatest things in poker that I've come to notice is that even when these younger people have a ton of money, they make a bunch of money, say they fish fifth or sixth.
Hold on a second here. These younger people.
Well, let me...
Are you saying that I'm old?
I'm just saying the younger generation of poker players, the 20-something-year-old, the guys who make a lot of money, you know, when they're very young, they don't take into account that that money will not last forever, and they will not win another series bracelet, likely in their lifetime.
Some of them do.
Well, some of them do, but some of them also waste a tremendous amount of money on girls and gambling and a ton of them.
A classic example, and I don't have to name names. I can tell you this whole story. This is a classic example. This actually fits the whole mental health thing, the whole drugs, wasting money, being on a high to a T. So I couldn't go to the World Series of Poker because my identity was stolen.
Yes, I recall that.
And instead, I sent someone else with my money for my ticket, with my air flight, you know, with the accommodation, with the spending money, with everything that was required. It's like, okay, take my place. You know, I'm hoping he's going to win, right?
Right, so you like, split some of the money.
I'm trusting in this guy. I'm hoping he's going to win. And it wasn't long before he'd spent the entry on cocaine and hookers and was booted out of the motel because he didn't pay the bills. And look, the point is, there you go. Classic example. Young in his 20s.
Probably a great poker player, too. Yeah, a great player, but just didn't have the control to play. Here's an example.
He went to Vegas and went, woohoo!
The Vegas woohoo. Yeah, that's what the Vegas woohoo is. And, you know, you got to be smart. Like, for example, I think we had this discussion once. Is first hand, four people or five people, the whole table goes all in, and you have pocket aces. What do you do?
Fold.
Because chances are you'll lose to the table. You're ahead before the flop, but chances are you're going to lose to the table.
Because, no, I'm not losing $10,500 entry. Everyone's even in chips the first hand.
Right, and you said to me, you said it best. You said it best. There is a time to go all in with aces, and the first hand of the World Series is not it. Here's an example, too.
That's my opinion, though. My opinion. Probably I'm going to get drilled over that.
But probably.
Obviously, towards the end, I'm going all in.
Exactly. I was playing a satellite tournament. And I had pocket kings, and there was five people.
Hold on. Before you continue, I have to say, going all in towards the end, because I have them covered in chips. You know, I have more chips than them. Not going all in with the same amount of chips and risking my tournament life.
Right. Well, let's just say this, for example. You got to be able to think clearly. That goes with good mental health, too. But, you know, avoiding the drugs and the alcohol, you got to think clearly. I had pocket kings, and I was playing a satellite tournament, and the top five people got to go into a higher tournament. and there was like 8 people left and 5 people went all in before me. I was in the big blind. I had pocket kings. I folded the pocket kings because one person was going to win that pot and 3 people would have been knocked out. 4 people would have been knocked out. And oh, it could have been split. Yeah, it could have been split, but the chances are someone was going to win it, and most of those people were going to be knocked out. So I was playing the structure of the tournament. You got to be able to think clearly with that, and you got to avoid that gambler mentality and play smart.
So, however, with that said, and there's going to be a lot of people that argue this, in my weed smoking days, I concentrated very well. And I mean very, very well. In fact, I think if I sat here and rolled a big fat blunt and smoked it and was used to smoking it, you know, like probably I should emphasize that, used to smoking it, because it would not apply right now. But if I was used to smoking it, I rolled a blunt, I think my concentration levels would actually be a lot stronger. But that does not mean my decision making is as clear. No,
again, we can only make decisions based on our own experiences, and we are not giving any type of broad medical advice to anybody in this situation. We are just
and furthermore,
yes, we're just giving general information, and it's different for each person. But in
some of the greatest players, I have to interrupt because you know it just sounds like we're a pair of squares, but I'm not. Furthermore, some of the greatest players in the world know that if I'm sitting playing live poker and I get a certain look on my face or a certain attitude, they bring me a bourbon.
Right.
I have one drink.
Yes.
And then I chill.
Your good friend Gary Benson is a master of deciphering that look, as I recall.
Yes, he is. He deciphered that look very well one
Well,
day.
Fortunately for me, you know, I have never, I've only had a few drinks a year. I never get too indulged. I'm proud to say I've never, ever had any illicit drug in my entire life. I've never even smoked and I've never even smoked a cigarette. Because I paid attention in eighth grade health class, and I know that it's bad for you.
Or good for you. You think that, for all you know, someone like me could have dropped you a Mickey and you've forgotten. You don't know what you got up to.
Well, I feel pretty confident in my recollection. But anyway, that's enough for the whole mental health spiel. And just
okay. So no more. Any way you look at it,
just be careful.
We were going to talk about that. Remember, as an example, eat really healthily.
Sure.
You are what you eat. You need to have good brain food. You're fueling your body like a car. You've got to have the right things in it for optimum mental health. End of story.
Well, in general, a healthy body always functions better, and that includes your mind as well.
Right. So obviously you can then say exercise. You know, the gym, don't just sit all the time. Another really important thing is sunshine. Get the hell out in the sun. There's so many pasty white poker players that should really be tanned up a little more.
And, you know, enjoy the sun. Like I said, if you're in Las Vegas, you're outside, walk around. Like you said, enjoy
the
sun.
The sun gives you vitamin something, D, I think it is.
Yes, vitamin D.
And that reduces depression.
Yeah, and also take a multivitamin. That always helps. Now, I take a neurotropic, which is just a... there's any number of them out on the market. Joe Rogan, basically, there's a series of, it's a capsule. It's a multivitamin for your brain, basically. A lot of highly enriched vitamins and minerals that support good brain function. The one I take is Brain Force. It works well for me. But check out if there's any
Centrum.
Yeah, there's any number of them. But it's good stuff. Just anything you can do. And exercise. You know, burn off some of that stress. Your body... You know, if you've got built up stress, you got to burn it off. You got to go exercise, take a 20-minute walk, go for a half hour swim, do something to get away from the everyday grind and just
yoga.
I've never done yoga.
Beer yoga.
I've never seen beer. I've seen baby yoga. I've seen goat yoga.
Everyone, you have to look up beer yoga. Fantastic. Yeah, fantastic man. Sport. But yes, you were right. Go out.
There are any number of any things that you can do. Just a quick Google search, you'll get someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to go a little bit more in depth, you can always consult your personal physician, and you know, take it one step at a time. But optimal body health, Optimal mind health is always the most desirable condition for any sport, gambling activity, poker, blackjack, roulette, advantage
anything,
play, whatever.
Yes,
exactly. Exactly.
So, or, of course, you could take the other option and be stupid like me and drink bourbon and take the odd Valium.
The odd Valium. Well, that's a possibility, but we try to
avoid that. But I've
got crazy
stuff in my life. That's how the show started.
Yes.
Like, come on. Yes. And I suffer panic disorder and anxiety disorder. Everyone knows this. Of course I'm going to take that at night time
exactly.
If I have a panic attack.
Exactly. So there's any number of things, and everybody's different. So you just got to find out with the help of a dietitian or a physician
or
a psychologist.
Like a Let's change subjects, because I wanted to talk about movies, because a lot of this stuff is shown in movies.
Oh, yeah,
and you
definitely
wanted to talk about movies too.
Yeah, one of the main topics I've always wanted to talk about is how wrong these gambling movies get it. I was watching the
Are they wrong about the drug and alcohol part and the poor mental health?
There's so many movies. Well, again, each person, each situation is different. There's no broad generalization. I'm sure those instances happen sometimes. But just what I want to talk about is the gambling aspects of these movies. Like, for example, I was watching The Hangover the other day. And
one of my favorite scenes is when Alan is trying to make the $80,000 back.
Yes, and one particular scene in that movie bothered me a lot, where the guy said, "Splitting fives. You never, ever split fives in a straight counting game."
Who,
never split fives?
Yeah.
Well, that's just commonality. In a straight count game.
No, who said to split them?
Well, in that movie, during that scene, they have, you know, when they're winning back the $80,000, he says, "Splitting fives." Yes, he says, "Splitting fives." The pit boss yells out, and you never split fives in a straight high up and down game.
Yeah, you also drive along with a giraffe in your car either. But
that's part three. I'm talking about part one.
Okay, all right.
So, but there are just other things that happen. Same thing in the movie 21. Now, the movie 21 was loosely based on the MIT blackjack teams,
I could swear it's loosely based on you.
No, I was way before my time playing in Vegas.
I know, but it kind of adds up. I mean, you could be mistaken.
Well, the methodology was pretty similar throughout, but in the movie they made it seem like when they bet their, you know, they were reckless. The only time that they lost monies was when they were reckless and were being, you know, just silly. But I haven't seen that movie in ages. But that's not how it goes. Like Bill Bettner's quote, you can do everything perfect and you could still get the snot kicked out of you. And the Six Stick Shoes are notorious for this, because the variance is so great in a Six Stick Shoe. I mean, you could literally lose $50,000, you know, betting a 1 to 10 spread, $100 to $1,000 a hand easily.
So for the poor suckers watching these movies, they're like, "Oh, fives," and they're getting this recollection. "Oh, I've got to split fives. I saw that on The Hangover. Split them.
Well,
and, oh,
yes.
I'm not going to lose."
These are very poor moves. Very, very poor moves. Now, I wonder that. I always came to the conclusion that in order for them to film in a casino, they have to put this stuff in there. Like you said, so if a person, you know, these millions of people watch these movies and they're playing and they say, "Oh, fives. The Hangover said I should split fives." And that's just never the case in a straight count game. Now, there are certain such games, like whether you're hole carding or net playing
which
the next card,
which they're not going to be doing.
Yeah,
we're talking, you know.
Yeah, that's a
most
super advanced
aren't going
stuff.
To be doing that.
Super advanced. So those type of
probably
movies,
most of our listeners aren't doing that.
I hope not. If they are, I would tell them to stop.
Hole carding?
Well, splitting fives. I'm sorry, splitting fives.
Oh, okay.
Hole carding. Right. If you can find a hole carding game, knock yourself out. Go nuts. But splitting fives or even splitting tens, which is either you're an idiot or you're a pro. Either the case, it draws attention, especially when you have a huge bet out. Say you're betting $1,000 and you now.
I'm no pro. That means you just called me an idiot.
Well, never.
I split tens.
I would never.
That's split how much I know.
Well, I've done it during my younger days with the MIT teams, and I had two bets of $5,000. This was at the Mirage years ago. And I had two bets of $5,000, and I had a 20 against the two 20s against the six, and the count was just through the roof. It was like positive 58 or something like 70% of
how
the cards.
How does it get to that? This is not a two deck game.
No. This is a six deck shoe.
Right.
And it just was unbelievable. So like 80% of the cards left their tens. So I split each hand three times, you know, so I have $30,000 on the table, and the dealer has a six up, pulls an eight underneath for a 14, and draws a nine. So I win, and that's when that's when I first got tapped saying you're done. So I just grabbed a $30,000. They had to pay me. They paid.
No, hold on a second. Surely splitting tens is not a huge indicator of an advantage player. I mean, I just said you call me an idiot because I'm no pro and I'd split tens.
Well, when you're betting a lot of money and you make those kind of plays, it definitely draws attention. And that's when they got very upset and said, you're done playing. So I happily walked away. Win money and get banned, then lose money and stay.
But tell me this. Wouldn't you draw less attention by splitting tens like ordinary folk like me, idiots, would do? Or you're sitting there and you're like standing on 20 when you've got two... I don't understand. I would have thought that would attract less attention.
Standing on a 20? Well, no.
Yes.
No. Standing
then
on...
again, with that kind of money, I suppose. It's
standing
different.
On a 20 is a very, very strong hand. You're almost guaranteed to win.
Of course it is. But
I'd say you're a 99% favorite. Yes. Well, again, don't...
I'm going to split the tens. My little $5 bets, I'm splitting the tens.
Well, again, you just... If you're betting a lot of money and you're splitting tens, or you're doubling ace nine or ace eight against the six or something, or those are definitely pro moves. So
they are.
Yeah.
Right.
So
okay.
Again,
all
right. there are a few things that counters have to kind of step back on when they're playing, and one of them is some of the the high value plays like doubling or splitting a 10 or doubling an ace nine against a five or a six or a seven or stuff like that. High percentage plays that give you a lot of money but also draw a lot of attention, because the objective is not only to win money but to be able to be welcome back and
stay under the radar.
Exactly. Yeah.
Stay under
exactly.
the radar.
Exactly.
Not get arrested like you have in the past.
Yeah, that's although they can't arrest you for straight counting cards. They can ask you to leave.
Oh, okay. Well, not getting escorted out by giant sized security guards.
Right. But in that realm, yeah. So the casinos, I think, in order for them to be allowed to be
wrong.
Well, yes, not all the time, but some subtle things.
No, I think the poker movies are terrible.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to get into.
Terrible happens.
There's some. What do you got? Rounders, which is a big poker movie. What's another big poker movie?
Of course, there was Molly's Game.
Molly's Game, right? Oh. I heard some things about Molly's Game.
And they're sitting there drinking scotch
yes.
on the rocks.
Now they said she only took. She said that she only take. She only took once. From a game. He said they only did it once, but I have it on good authority from someone who was she took it almost very regularly. So sorry,
well,
Molly.
I may or may not have the same information, but I don't talk out of turn.
Right. I'm not giving names, but anyway. But no. what other poker movies got it completely wrong, and how?
Well, Lucky You, I think, was way out.
That's,
So Lucky You was focusing on relationship. It's like a girl, you know, and a guy. Right. And he's playing the World Series of Poker, and he ends up against his dad at the final table, and, you know, getting bankrolls and doing this and doing that. And it was,
doesn't he lay down? Doesn't he lay down aces or something?
Yes, he lays the winning hand down against his father. But the point that I was getting at there is, like, you know, like, they're teaching people to do this and do that for bankroll management, and that you should use every cent you've got to buy into tournaments because, you know, you've got a great chance of winning because you're one of the best players in the world. It's not reality. I mean, the more reality is the fact that he ends up in lots of debt all the time and...
Right,
rips off his girlfriend and whatever else. That's reality.
Yeah, the reality is, especially now, poker is a tough game, and tournaments especially. You could lose all year,
mm-hmm.
or all decade, and make it back and win one, because the variance on tournaments is extremely high. Not only in tournaments do you have to run well, which means you have to get good hands and good cards, but you also have to avoid running bad while getting bad beats.
There's an example, Scott Blumenfeld, you know, yes, the World Series of Poker,
a couple years ago.
So he's lost a whole ton of weight. I saw earlier he's been working really hard on his diet and fitness and mental health and well-being and whatever else, yet still he got whacked out of the World Series of Poker main event really quickly this year, 2018, even though, you know, he'd previously won. So Lucky You gives an example that I'm one of the world's greatest players. I'm going to go to the end, I know, so I'm going to use every last cent I can in this tournament. Bad move.
Well, obviously, see, again, you know. Poker is a game of, tournament especially, is a game of what now. I mean, nobody really cares what you did in the past.
It doesn't even matter if you're the world's best player, is what right. I'm saying. You can be smacked out of the tournament.
Yes, I remember, was it last year Vanessa Spelt got... beat, yeah, like, look, within 40 minutes right. in or something, where she exactly. got beat against quad sevens.
And, you know, regardless of lots of people not liking her, which is, you know, quite clear, I think she's one hell of a player. And
oh, duh. Her results, like, oh, her Jesus, results are great.
She's like, I've got a bad feeling and I probably shouldn't call and whatever else, but she did, and boom, out she went.
Yeah.
So, yes, the movies portray that, you know, these people are going to become champions. They're such great players. They're going to final table. They're going to win these events. Their life is going to end up roses. And
most often the case, that doesn't happen. I mean, when you were here in Las Vegas, we saw a lot of vagrants, people who live in tent cities, homeless people. That was pretty plentiful.
Well, yes. Asked you if you'd mind collecting me and driving me so that I could actually see that side of the United States, because I'd not seen anything
right.
like that.
And a lot of that comes from a combination of gambling, drugs, and alcohol. Again, people who are not in mental health.
I sound really awful wanting to go on homeless people spotting.
Well, let's get this straight. We were supposed to be collecting in the wintertime blankets and things. There was an organization that was going to get those to us, and we wanted to see where to go.
But they didn't turn up before
yes,
I left.
Yes,
so
we got those
so
out
that,
at a later date.
I just wanted
date.
To make it clear that I, you know, wasn't going out there to just
homeless,
human
yeah.
spot homeless people.
Right.
And, you know, of course I wanted to see how they lived and where they lived and if they required such things. But, yeah, it was
right.
for a reason. You're right.
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 You could
tell that a lot were on drugs, and some had alcohol bottles with them.
Exactly. So, most of those people, which I never give money to, unfortunately, it's just I've seen it too many times where you give money to people, and they run in and they either gamble or try to get a hit of something. Now, if I see someone hanging outside of the store and, you know, hey, can I have some money? Are you hungry? I'll buy you something to eat. But I will
right.
not. I will not give you straight cash because you're going to get a hit of something. And if you say, "I'll get you something to eat," then they'll be like, "Okay." Then I know they're serious about
there's
that.
There's a man that asks for food near Fremont Street, and
yes.
I saw you give him a sandwich.
Yes.
I felt really sorry for that man. All he's doing is asking for food because he's hungry, and he must know that people are reluctant to hand out money. So he's got to sign up, any food, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Well, you gave him half of a Subway, whatever it was.
Right.
And as a poor man, I realized what an awful life he had to go through this sandwich bit by bit by bit to just check that you hadn't done anything awful
right,
to it.
Right, right, to make sure.
With that said, there, I think he appeared to be a homeless vet.
Possibly. Well, the tragic thing is in Las Vegas, you know, there's a Nellis Air Force Base is up near here, and that's where, unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of people who in this town either end up A, in the casinos, or B, in the military at some point. Mm-hmm. And some people go overseas and they come back and they are not well in the right mental health state, so they end up, you know, on the streets, unfortunately. The VA can only do so much for them, and you know, they do what they can to get by. So again,
that all ties back to mental health.
Exactly.
See, the movies are making people think that everything's roses, and it's probably half the issues, half right. of the reasons why people have mental health
issues. That's a possibility. They do things they shouldn't have. People overextend themselves. They bet money they don't have. They think everybody comes to Las Vegas think they're going to strike it rich, and that
not me.
99.9 that almost never happens. Like
so I'm like one of the ones that are just completely and utterly out of their minds, or I'm
possibly not. No, but again,
I didn't go there ever thinking I'm going to get rich, and I've never gone there thinking I'm going to go on a drug binge, and I've only once ever gone out and got drunk, which I proposed to my sister.
I think she said no, right?
No, she said yes.
But it took some convincing, right? It took some convincing. But anyway.
Everyone was cheering. The point is, I'm obviously weird.
Yes. So anyway, that's we're going to tie that off there, I suppose. And
for the record, the show was done about mental health and these movies, etc., because of Are You Okay Day. Now, we're a few days late, but everyone, are you okay? If you're not...
Is that a holiday in Australia?
Yes.
Or this is a proclamation day?
It's not a holiday. No, we don't have a holiday, but it is a day where worldwide, in fact, you ask everyone, are you okay?
So. Right. Okay. Before we wrap up, next week, we have a very special guest on, Eric Audet. Is that how you spell
it? Yes, we spoke about him before.
Yes, Eric Audet, the Death Row Poker Pro, which you, Miss Danielle Adams, did the story on when it first happened.
Many years ago. Yes.
But basically, let's just kind of recap that Eric Audet, just the Reader's Digest 30-second version, was conned into...
No, he wasn't
tricked into. Yes, unbeknownst to him.
Against his knowledge.
Unbeknownst to him, he was lured into...
He smuggled fucking drugs to Pakistan.
Yes, he... Out of
Pakistan. In a fucking case. And got caught and got thrown on death row. Sorry,
right.
I was just getting irritated. I don't know why.
Well, unbeknownst to him.
It really upsets me.
Oh, it does. And Eric Audet is one of the most, I guess, it was the nicest, most upbeat guys I've ever met, considering all the things that have happened to him. So we're going to get into that in a great lot more detail next week. So,
Miss Ems. And I'm going to try and hold my emotional state intact so I'm not, he fucking smuggled drugs.
No, yes, it was unbeknownst to him, though. But in any event, this is Hot Aussie Chicks signing off. Until next week, aces and faces, everybody.
Valium.